Wanted. Wanted for jailbreak. Presented in the public interest, this is the program that brings you for the first time on the air a nationwide manhunt in action. This is the program that has led to the capture of three dangerous criminals. From the record, the on-the-spot reports of the actual people involved. Nothing is withheld, no one is protected. Here are the dramatic eyewitness accounts of a man wanted. Wanted for jailbreak. And now, Wanted's on-the-spot investigator, Walter McGraw.
Good evening. Once again, you and I are going on a nationwide manhunt for a criminal who is now at large somewhere in this country. Tonight, you will hear from the actual eyewitnesses who were involved in this case. You'll meet the fugitive's friends and family, his victims, and the police who are at this moment working on his case. Remember, each and every one of these people are putting themselves on the spot to give you first-hand information about a man who is wanted. Tonight, we're turning wanted spotlight on a psychopathic murderer, a man whom psychiatrists say should be segregated from his fellow men, a man to be carefully watched for the rest of his life. Yet, this is a man who is at this moment at large, possibly endangering even you. So listen, these are the facts.
The date, October 12th, 1939. The location, a quiet residential street in the small, sleepy town of Purcell, Oklahoma. A line of residential houses placed one close to the other. So close, in fact, it's an easy matter to see into the neighbors' rooms.
The voices you hear next are those of the actual people who, through no fault of their own, are involved in the case of Gladys Tibbett Glasgow Stewart and her husband, young Lieutenant Alvin Stewart. First, their next-door neighbors.
I'm Mrs. Jim Traynor of Purcell, Oklahoma. Husband and I live next door to the Stewarts. I was up tending to the children about 2:30, and on my way back to bed, I heard loud screams. I looked out of the window and saw the screams was coming from the Stewarts next door. I saw the book of a man coming through the screen door. Gladys Stewart screamed, and her husband, Sergeant Stewart, sat up in bed and says, "You have the wrong man." But the intruder says, "No, I haven't," and he shot him. Gladys screamed again, and he turned the gun in and shot her several times. Gladys fell to the floor, and he left, and then turned around and came back and hit her several times with his gun over on the head. "Now here is my husband. Jim, what did you do then?"
"I asked you, should I shoot him? I had a six-shooter in my hand. You said no. He is not bothering us, so let him go. I watched him so far as I could see him, and then I went on my front porch to see where he went. About one half block down the street, he parked his car, and then he entered his car and drove away. And then I went out to call Sheriff Edgman."
"I'm Sheriff Edgman of McLean County, Oklahoma. I received a call about 3 o'clock, and on arriving at the scene, I discovered the screen door had been forced open, and Sergeant Stewart had been shot by the intruder and was lying in bed dead. The shots and noise aroused Gladys, and she cried for her son, Dana, to go for help. She then grappled with the intruder and was shot twice in close range. I began searching the house for evidence while the wounded girl was being questioned by the county attorney, E. Smith Hester."
"My name is E. Smith Hester. I was the prosecuting attorney of McLean County, Oklahoma. At the time, I was called to the home of Sergeant Stewart in the west part of Purcell. Upon my arrival there, about 2:40 in the morning, I found that Sergeant Stewart was shot through the heart and lying in bed. Mrs. Stewart had been shot twice, once through the spleen, and was bleeding badly. She advised me that she realized that she was going to die.
The dying girl, Gladys Glasgow Stewart, lapsed into unconsciousness and was taken to the hospital. County Attorney E. Smith Hester and Sheriff Edgemond hoped she'd regain consciousness and make a full statement, giving the needed details of the attack. They knew from the first that this double tragedy was no accidental shooting by a prowler, but the direct result of Gladys's past life. And that past had started 10 years before. 10 years before, when Gladys was 18.
Of course, I'm no one to talk. I'm not the gossiping kind. But Gladys, well, her name was Gladys Tippett then when she was 18. And for a girl 18, she had a way with men. My goodness, she was so popular that, well, no other girl in town had a chance. I must admit, Gladys was a... Well, she was much prettier than any other young girl had any right to be.
Naturally, Gladys had a lot of beaus. Not that she cared for any one in particular. But every young man in town was a courting her, and even old Raymond Glasgow said she was a mighty cute trick. Of course, everybody knew Raymond Glasgow was kidding. He'd been married and past 40. But he talked about her so much, he got his son Ted all steamed up, and Ted Glasgow began to call on Gladys.
They began dating steady, and it wasn't long before wedding bells rang out. It was quite a wedding. Gladys so beautiful and young, Ted so happy, and Gladys' folks, the Tibbetts, thrilled to death. And even Ted's father, Raymond Glasgow, seemed happy, now that Gladys was his daughter-in-law.
Married now, Gladys faded from the public eye. And within a few short years, Ted and Gladys had a child, a son named Danny. Then gossip started again.
About this time, a fellow named Preacher Deaton was seen in and around Purcell. Fine man, the preacher. He was not only a holy man, but he happened to be an important member of the Oklahoma State Legislature. Well, with anybody that important around, folks were naturally interested in everything he did.
As for Gladys, she was happy, happily married to Ted Glasgow. Frequently, Ted and Gladys, Ted's mother and father, old Raymond Glasgow and his wife, and Gladys's mother and father, Mr. and Mrs. Tibbett, would go out together. On Saturday night, they'd drop into one of the various roadside cafes and spend the evening having a few drinks together.
But whenever they had a few drinks together, the fighting would start. Old Raymond Glasgow was a moody kind of guy, and he'd get mad over anything. Gladys had a time of it trying to keep peace in the family.
Then, on a Saturday night in the fall of 1937, the Glasgows, the Tibbetts, Ted and Gladys stopped in for a drink at a place called Camp Joe.
This is Ray Hammers. I run Camp Joe. About 10:30, 11 o'clock one night, Raymond Glasgow and his wife, young Ted Glasgow and his wife Gladys, June Tippett and his wife came to my place, all enjoying themselves and having a good time. When a little ruckus come up between Raymond Glasgow and Tippett, finally they got into a little fight, and Truman Deaton, legislator from Pontotoc County that was happened to come through, kicked Glasgow out the door, and he came back in, he and Ted, hunting for Deaton. And we tried to stop him at the door, but he kept coming and kept advancing on Deaton till finally he drew his gun and fired two shots. First shot evidently aimed at Raymond Glasgow missed. The second shot hit Ted, which killed him. After that, I called the police.
My name is Walter Woods, connected with the Sheriff Department of McLean County. When I was called to Camp Joe, I was the first officer to arrive at the scene. I questioned the witnesses about the shooting that had happened there. And I found out that Preacher Deaton had shot young Glasgow. Later, I returned to town here at Purcell to put out an alarm for Deaton. But he surrendered himself to the Sheriff's Department. He admitted that he shot Glasgow, but he shot in self-defense.
Preacher Deaton, a member of Oklahoma's state legislature, was arrested for the murder of young Ted Glasgow. The small-town self-defense shooting blossomed into a statewide scandal, and the face of gorgeous Gladys and her family crashed into the headlines of every paper in the state, together with that of Preacher Deaton. And Deaton went to trial.
The jury returned a verdict of innocence, self-defense. Preacher Deaton was exonerated of any guilt in the matter of the murder of young Ted Glasgow.
Exonerated by a jury, Deaton was released. Oklahoma papers heralded his release and innocence, but that was an election year. The voting public went to the polls, and when they saw his name on the ballot...
Wasn't that the fella involved in that shooting?
Sure, that's the guy killed a man.
Imagine him running for office.
A jury had exonerated him of any guilt, but the scandal had a lasting effect, and Preacher Deaton was voted out of office. After that, no word was heard from Preacher Deaton at all. He seemed to have disappeared. As for Gladys, she was a widow now. A widow with a child.
At first, Raymond Glasgow took on something terrible about the death of his son. He seemed to feel he himself was to blame for the fracas. He wanted to make it all up to Gladys. He said he wanted to support his daughter-in-law and grandson.
Gladys turned that offer down.
A lot of other fellas offered to help. They all wanted to marry her.
Gladys turned them down.
She decided to move home with her own mother and father, the Tibbetts, and to get a job.
This is Ruth Hardage. I knew Gladys Glasgow. She used to work at the Archer Lumber Company as a bookkeeper. She was liked by everyone. She used to go out on a lot of dates. She was very popular, especially with the boys.
But popular Gladys wasn't interested. Days she worked. Evenings she spent at home with son Danny and her family.
Usually she didn't have any visitors except for Raymond Glasgow. He used to drop by all the time. Usually it was some kind of a present for Danny. He used to brag to everybody that he and the youngster were great friends.
1 year passed for Gladys Tibbett Glasgow. She worked hard and was lonely.
Then Gladys met Lieutenant Stewart. He had been transferred to the CCC camp, which is located right outside of her cell. Handsome fellow, this Lieutenant Alvin Stewart. Handsome and clean-cut.
At first, the folks used to see Gladys and the lieutenant stroll around town together. Then they noticed that young Danny was always along. That boy took the lieutenant from the start. Well, before long, Gladys let us know that she and the lieutenant had serious intentions. And that was nice for Danny, too, since he and the lieutenant got along fine.
Lieutenant Alvin Stewart and Gladys Tibbett Glasgow were married in the spring of the year 1939.
Now everyone thought the past was buried. Now Gladys had a new start. There's an old adage, you can't escape your past. Gladys couldn't. Right after her marriage to the lieutenant, she seemed nervous about something. And each succeeding day, that nervousness grew. She'd tell the neighbors sometimes that she was worried. Sometimes she wouldn't talk at all. Just walk around the backyard of her house, hugging the child to her. Jumping at the sound of the wind in the trees, and crying out at any sudden noise. Lots of folks thought Gladys was imagining things, having a breakdown. And then...
October 12th, 1939.
That morning, Gladys had been crying. She was almost frantic. She told the neighbors, I'm afraid, not for myself, but I'm afraid for Danny. But she wouldn't tell anyone who she was afraid of.
During the night of October 12, 1939, the intruder broke in and shot both Gladys and her husband.
After the shooting, Gladys Glasgow Stewart said she knew she was going to die. She was taken to the hospital unconscious. County Attorney Hester kept a vigil outside her door, while Purcell Sheriff Edgman went to work gathering the details of the case.
He got a description of the murderer.
I saw him. He walks with a limp. I heard him talk. I know who he is.
He got a description of the gun, .38 Colt revolver. It's registered.
He got... Got a description placing the murderer at the scene of the crime.
And he got a motive, if you can call it that.
The day Gladys married young Lieutenant Stewart, it started.
He was jealous of the lieutenant, not jealous like an ordinary guy, but different. He started to think about it, brooding, kind of, thinking up ideas all the time.
Then he had trouble on the job. You see, he was a guard at the penitentiary at Granite City. Suddenly, he seemed to go to pot. He was acting strange and sick. They gave him a leave of absence, thinking he needed a rest.
He needed a rest, but he didn't get it. He had more time on his hands to think about Gladys and the lieutenant. There was nothing she did that he didn't know about. Stand watching her house, waiting for a look at her and a look at that kid Danny.
That night of the murder, he drove to see his brother. It was after midnight. Funny thing, no one knew what was really in his mind. He said he was depressed and upset. He threatened to commit suicide. Then as he left his brother's house, he mentioned that he wanted to take one last look at Gladys.
Yes, Sheriff Edgman found out everything there was to know about the shooting. Then word came from the hospital that Gladys Glasgow Stewart had recovered consciousness.
Sheriff Edgman, we immediately went into Oklahoma City, into the St. Anthony Hospital, and got another statement from Gladys about what happened at the residence. She said that Raymond Glasgow was the man that shot her.
Shortly after noon, Gladys Glasgow Stewart died. And Raymond Glasgow, ex-father-in-law Glasgow, kindly grandfather of the many gifts, was wanted for a double murder.
Glasgow had disappeared. He lit out right after the shooting. Purcell police spread the word to the Oklahoma State Police. Roadblocks were set up, and word was received.
This is Officer Ron Wheatley, Lawton Police Department, Lawton, Oklahoma. I received a long-distance telephone call from Sheriff Edgman, Sheriff of McLean County, Oklahoma. He stated that Raymond Glasgow, who was a resident of Lawton, Oklahoma, was wanted for murder and for us to be on the lookout for him. Before I could notify our mobile units and police patrolmen of the wanted notice on Raymond Glasgow, he came into the police station and identified himself and stated that he was wanted for murder in McLean County and wanted to give up. I immediately booked Glasgow and telephoned Sheriff Edgman that we had him in custody. Sheriff Edgman stated that he'd be right down after him and return him to McLean County, where he was tried for murder.
Raymond Glasgow, 46-year-old father-in-law of the gorgeous Gladys, went before the jury. At first, he entered a plea of not guilty. Later, he changed that plea to guilty. The state tried to get the maximum sentence, the chair, but there were extenuating circumstances.
This is Dr. Frank Kane. Dr. Griffin, superintendent of the Central State Hospital over at Norman, interviewed Raymond Glasgow and turned in the following report. Glasgow is suffering from a mental condition and is what the medical profession terms a psychopathic patient. A man in this condition is much more likely to commit such crimes since he is under much less restraint than a normal person. Any person in Glasgow's mental condition is very dangerous and should be kept apart from other people for the remainder of his life.
With this report in mind, the jury returned a guilty verdict but recommended clemency.
Raymond Glasgow was sentenced at the Oklahoma State Penitentiary for the rest of his normal life.
This is Warden Burford, the Oklahoma State Penitentiary at McAllister, Oklahoma. Raymond Glasgow is received here the 9th of November, 1939. Being a farmer and having served as a guard at Granite, it was only 6 years until he was made a trustee. When he was made trustee, he was assigned to the dairy barn under supervision of Mr. John Yarber.
This is John Yarber, superintendent of the dairy at the Oklahoma State Penitentiary. When Raymond Glasgow came out born as a trustee, we had him working in the milk room for about 2 weeks, and he was very efficient in there, and I talked to him and found that he knew a lot about cattle, and he was good on figuring feed and percentage of protein in it and stuff like that. I made him my clerk, and he worked in the office for 2 years. He was also made a sleep out. He used to sleep here all night, and the guard would check him every 2 hours. However, on the night of April 17, 1948, when the guard came along at 3 in the morning, why, Raymond wasn't there. We immediately put out a statewide alarm.
A statewide alarm for a double murderer. A man emotionally unstable, a psychopath. The alarm spread from Oklahoma through the entire Midwest. But from the moment of his escape until the present moment, no word at all has been heard of Raymond Glasgow. It is not our function here to determine the guilt or innocence of a man, nor do we intend to. But according to the facts you've heard tonight, and or other pertinent material, Raymond Glasgow is wanted.
Here again is Walter McGraw.
You can help find Raymond Glasgow. Remember, you, the listener, have already run up an impressive record with the apprehension of 3 of the fugitives whose case histories we've broadcast. But to bring Glasgow to justice, you must be informed of all the facts. What does he look like? How does he dress? What are his habits? These we will give you, so stand by. How can you recognize him? Listen, and listen carefully.
This is Warden Burford, Raymond Glasgow, age 58 years, height 5'8", weight 172 pounds, medium build, hair blonde gray, teeth good, tattoo of horseshoe, horse head and whip, inside right arm, tattoo of dagger and heart, inside of left arm between elbow and wrist.
Now back to Walter McGraw in New York.
If you should see Raymond Glasgow, don't approach him on the street. Remember, this man is mentally ill, a psychopath. He may be very dangerous. Simply call your own local police. Tell them that you've seen Raymond Glasgow, an escapee from Oklahoma State Penitentiary at McAllister, Oklahoma. Remember that. Raymond Glasgow is wanted by the Oklahoma State Penitentiary at McAllister. This is his description.
Raymond Glasgow is 58 years of age, 5'8" tall, weighing 172 pounds. He has blue eyes, graying blonde hair, and light skin. He has a half-inch cut scar on the side of his palm near the thumb. The inside of his right arm, between the elbow and wrist, is tattooed a horseshoe, a horse's head, and a whip. His left arm is tattooed in the same place with a dagger and a heart.
To date, we've presented case histories on 12 of the most dangerous fugitives at large in this country. You, the listener, have brought to justice 3 out of the 12, an impressive record, a good job. But 9 of these men are still at large. 9 dangerous fugitives are still loose. So let's look at the scoreboard and bring these 9 bums in. Who are they?
Myron Mike Selleck, wanted for unlawful flight by the FBI.
Mikey Selleck is a former member of Detroit's Purple Gang. He was convicted of armed robbery and conspiracy to commit murder. Selleck is one of the most dangerous men at large today. He was a key figure in the sensational murder of Michigan State Senator Warren G. Hooper. Directly after our broadcast on July 14th, we received word that Selleck was in Los Angeles, California, but he escaped a police dragnet there. Additional word has come in since then. Myron Mike Selleck has been in or near Cleveland, Ohio. Myron Mike Selleck was seen near or in Cleveland, Ohio. If you know of his present whereabouts, report it at once to the FBI.
Glenroy Wright, wanted for jailbreak.
The latest information on this big-time bum, hophead, and trigger-happy gunman is that he's in Dallas, Texas, working with a Dallas mob. Did you hear that, Texas? This is your baby. Look for him. Report him to the FBI.
Kenneth Wagner, wanted for jailbreak.
Kenneth Wagner, the 5-time admitted killer who was a hero in his own hometown, is still at large. Although there have been numerous communications with this program assuring us Wagner wants to give himself up so that his case can be reconsidered, none of these mystery voices have paid off. Meanwhile, he's still wanted by the warden of Parchman Prison in Mississippi.
The Sea Brothers.
Thurman and Troy Sea are practitioners of a confidence game which has robbed innocent thousands. Right after the wanted broadcast, we were advised by the Zanesville, Ohio police that they'd had tips reporting the Seas to be in their area. But no capture resulted. So watch out when you're asked to cash a check by a stranger. All information concerning the Seas should be directed to the attention of the District Attorney's Office, Denver, Colorado. They are wanted there.
Henry Clay Tillett.
We've had no word at all on Henry Clay Tillett, but keep on the lookout for him. Remember, this makeup artist who disguises himself as an Indian is one of the FBI's 10 most wanted men in America today. California still looks like the best bet.
Fred the Angel Tenuto.
Fred Tenuto, the gun punk who likes to kill, has struck again. His last robbery, that we know about, was in Pittsburgh. Remember, Fred Tenuto is number two public enemy. He's dangerous and he's tricky. Our latest information places him once again in New York City.
Willie the Actor Sutton.
Willie Sutton is number one public enemy. The voice of the underworld has the latest information on him.
This Bird Sutton is a smart guy. I once told you that he knows his stuff. He never works with the same gang more than once. And the reason he don't do it is because he don't want anybody to be able to put the finger on him. But now he changed. He's working with a partner named Tom Kling. You remember I told you about Tom Kling? This guy can be spotted easy now because recently he pulled a holdup and got a bust on the head. And he's got a scar that anybody can recognize. And this guy is also tattooed from head to foot. Now, if you want to pick both of them up, and the best way to do it is first find Kling because he hasn't got any brains. He's the guy that'll ultimately lead you to Sutton. If you want to find both of them, hit the waterfronts. If you hear of a big-time racket right on the waterfront, you're going to get a beautiful whiff of Sutton and Kling.
Nine fugitives at large, nine dangerous criminals still out free to rob and murder unless you stop them. Many of you might have information concerning any one of these men. If you've seen them, or if you think you know someone who might have information about them, notify the authorities or write directly to me, Walter McGraw, care of Wanted, NBC, New York. All mail will be considered confidential unless you otherwise specify. Remember, be sure of all your facts and give all details in your letter. Write directly to me, Walter McGraw, care of Wanted, NBC, New York. That's Walter McGraw, Wanted, NBC, New York. Now, this is Walter McGraw saying there's no time like now to wipe out crime.
Watch for the return of Wanted when you will again hear the actual people give their eyewitness accounts of the country's most dangerous fugitives who are wanted. Wanted by the police of the nation.
All material heard tonight was factual from the record. Pseudonames were used for Mr. and Mrs. Traynor for their safety. All other names were real. Tonight's report was written by P.L. Mayer. Music was by Morris Mamorski. William Meader was at the organ. The narrator was Fred Collins. Wanted was supervised for NBC by Joel Hamill and produced and directed by Walter McGraw. Now stay tuned for your hit parade on NBC.